What's up? It's your boys Jordan and Abraham. As always, he's a professional runner, so he's your fast friend, and I'm an MD PhD student, so I'm your smart friend. But most importantly, we are your friends who read One Piece. If you're listening to us on Spotify, please take a moment to rate us 5 stars, and feel free to reach out to us at our YouTube page, Friends Who Read One Piece, or on Twitter at FWROP Pod. We look forward to hearing from all of you. Jordan. You finally gave a little bit of a concession to Joaquin in the group chat this week about the contents of this chapter. I feel like I want to hear your overall opinion on the chapter before I even say anything about chapter
I feel
1123.
concession is a little bit strong of a word. I did not concede that all of the other chapters that I had been saying were kind of interesting, were not interesting. But this chapter, even from the point of the spoilers came out, and as I actually read it, I was like, dang, like basically. We learned a couple interesting things. I think there were a couple hints of things that might be to come that were interesting, but on the whole, it was a long chapter to basically just be like, here's what Vegapunk did before he did died. I was someone who thought that Vegapunk might have planned some of this and like had an idea that York was the killer. That was one of the things we talked about a few weeks ago, but like I didn't need to have all of this and then nothing else about the present in the chapter and have the Straw Hats just be, you know, at the beginning they're like, we're going to Elbaf, and at the end they're like, we're still going to Elbaf.
That was literally what I was going to say. I don't know when you stopped watching the anime, but I remember there was a point in the anime before I dropped it where it would just be like the opening would happen. There would be like, eight, I think it was Fishman Island actually that this happened in, where there would be like 7 or 8 minutes of just like random recap stuff, you know. And then the episode started with like Luffy trying to fight Jinbei to go beat up Hordy, and then 5 minutes later the episode wrapped up with Luffy fighting Jinbei to go beat up Hordy. And I was just like, what the hell am I? That's how this chapter felt to me. I was just like,
Because for even for whatever things that Vegapunk dropped that might have been interesting hints, like most of it was that us just seeing how stuff that we pretty much knew happened had happened.
yeah. No, I thought this chapter was pretty mid, to be honest. I thought it was a lot of, yeah, it was just like, it felt like just a recap episode, right? There were like the Shanks Haki thing, maybe that can be something interesting. We'll talk about that down the line. The whole ancient weapon stuff that we're also gonna talk about down the line, like those could be interesting, but those are also kind of like, we knew Shanks had great Haki. We knew well, we didn't know, but we kind of expected that the weapon that destroyed Lucia was an ancient weapon, right? So I don't know. It didn't even the reveals, quote unquote, that we got didn't really feel like reveals. But why don't we just jump in to the actual contents of the chapter? Why don't you give me a breakdown of what happened?
Beautiful. With everyone, including the Vice Admirals, knocked out by Joy Boy's Haki, as we mentioned, this week's chapter is a Vegapunk flashback over the course of the 2 weeks before Egghead. Shaka, Pythagoras, and the Stella Vegapunk are on Egghead and come to the realization that someone tampered with the Mother Flame to steal its energy. To pull this off, Shaka says, the culprit must be a Vegapunk. They all think it's Lilith, but 1 week before the present, Pythagoras reveals that he's identified the culprit. York has been syncing fake memories with punk records and tampering with surveillance snails at the scene of the crime. Abraham, this seemed clear to me from the text, but I did call it. Like I was just saying, we said it, we saw a few weeks ago that something didn't make sense from the beginning. Like that something didn't make sense to York, and Vegapunk had a plan. Still not sure exactly why he had to die as part of the plan, because I'm pretty sure that was one of the things that we were saying is like, if he had it figured out, then why did he die? Like, why not just hit up Shanks or something? But I did kind of call that.
Yeah, I think the reason why is because he wanted something meaningful to come from his death, right? Like, and maybe he could, I guess the answer is he could have just broadcast sent out this broadcast and done what you're saying and still been alive. But yeah, it could also be that Oda didn't really want Vegapunk in his story after this point, right? Like, if Vegapunk has all of these answers and knows all of these secrets that the Straw Hats are supposed to journey to discover, it would feel like what almost like what's the point of the rest of the journey, right? You just ask, just it's just ask Vegapunk, right? I think that's why he had that whole scene with Rayleigh and Sabaody where he explicitly had Luffy react like that, because it's the same thing, you know, the easy, like if you have characters that know quote unquote too much, it's kind of hard to keep them in your story. So maybe, you know, this is like a meta kind of analysis kind of thing about why Vegapunk died, but that might have been why Oda wrote him out of his story.
It does make sense. I do think that it makes sense for him to die at this point in the story. I just feel like it could have been that he decides to send off the broadcast without necessarily having been, you know, we don't have, he doesn't have to have planned it to be like, I'm sending out this broadcast and I've made preparations to send the broadcast at any point and I'm gonna get it off at the very last minute before I get killed. I think all kinds of things like that would have been possible, but I do like the idea, at the very least thematically, that you brought up of Vegapunk thinking about what do I want my death to mean. And so I'm sort of like choosing to die in this place. I do think he made a remark later in the chapter about death, and that's obviously one of the themes from the characters that we see from Hira Luke, who I know is your guy. You know, you love that Chopper backstory. Fisher Tiger, who is even more your guy. I know you love Fishman Island, number one arc of the whole of One Piece, according to Abraham. And no, nothing to say about me suggesting that Fishman Island was the come on.
My stance on this is being clear. I don't have anything to say.
Yeah.
What did Jay-Z once said? Don't argue with fools because people from a distance can't tell who's who. So I'm just not gonna argue with the
Fair enough.
fool.
So 6 days
Okay.
before the present, when the world government erases Lucia, Vegapunk deduces the part of the Mother Flame stolen by York has been used to power the ancient weapon, lamenting that he personified his entire greed. Because the world government will chase him to the end of the world, he resolves to meet the end of his life in grand fashion by doing what O'Hara couldn't: broadcasting his message to the end of the world. What constitutes death for someone like us? Shaka muses in front of Punk Records. Before they go, there's one other thing we must safeguard: our cloud loft technology to manufacture artificial island clouds. It may be pivotal in saving humanity in the near future. This seems like a kind of a big hint, Abraham, and like something we've toyed with for theories in the past. What do you
We
make
have
about this cloud loft tech?
some of these theories which you have mocked incessantly. Let me break this down for you, right? Because I've felt for the longest time that the reason why I believe that Sky that Laugh-Tail is on the moon is because Skypiea, I think Skypiea parallels the end game storyline. I think that what this final quote unquote battle against the world government, the search for the One Piece, like all of those, all of that entire storyline, beat for beat, is mirrored in Skypiea, right? It's literally the only arc where the objective is a treasure hunt. They literally go to the Sky Island to find the gold. They go to When they get to the Sky Island, the person that they're fighting is, they end up fighting God, like God Enel, versus like, you know, the celestial dragons who treat themselves as God. Luffy ends up being the natural enemy of God because he's rubber and Enel is lightning, and the D's are the natural enemy. It's just like there's so many parallels between Skypiea and what we expect the Laugh Tale slash final end game storyline to be, that I love that now that this flooding is happening, that's just another way to like tie Skypiea back into that storyline, right? Like another connection between the end game of the story and Skypiea. It makes total sense, obviously, right? That if
Right.
the sea level is flooded, that hopefully, you know, people can take refuge like up in the clouds. But like, yeah, I don't know. What did you think?
I'm definitely intrigued. Now, I want to say really quickly, are there clouds on the moon?
I don't know. Maybe in the One Piece world there are.
Well,
Maybe
we've seen the moon. Hold on,
island
hold on.
clouds will take people to the moon.
Were there clouds on the moon when we saw Enel on the moon?
I don't know. It might have been a clear night. You know, there's not, I don't always see clouds every night during.
Hold on, hold on, hold on. I feel like we saw some vast distance, some vast spaciousness expanse from ML. And did you see any clouds
Hey,
anywhere on the moon?
what I'm telling you is, if we can bring people from the sea, like the blue sea to the white sea, I feel like we can bring people from the white sea to the moon.
Alice, can you give me a quick like distance from Earth to the end of the atmosphere and then the end of the atmosphere to the moon, please? Now, I want to say I understand that the One Piece moon might not be exactly the same as the real world moon, but if you can give me some estimates on that, that would be amazing.
Yeah, so we got about 10,000 kilometers of atmosphere, and then, I mean, this is real world.
Yeah, exactly. Why are you projecting your
238,000 miles.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm just saying, man. I'm just
Real,
saying the
hey,
moon is a
bro,
lot further.
in the real world, if you take your ship onto a knockup stream, first of all, the knockup
Yeah.
stream in the real world, the ship doesn't ride the knockup stream, the ship blows up. So I don't know why you're applying real world logic into this fantasy world.
I'm just saying outer space is a long way, but
It's
I don't know
okay.
exactly what the real world, but whatever. I'm
It's
just
the
saying outer
ultimate
space.
journey.
Outer space, it would be a journey, that's for sure. It would be a journey. I'm just saying outer
What
space
did you think
is a long
about
way. I think
ignore the
it's
moon
very,
stuff?
yeah,
Yeah.
it's definitely interesting. I feel like there was a theory that we might have reviewed that, who even knows? Maybe I even gave this one an F-class theory about originally the original island, like the world we're currently on is actually kind of like a cloud island from another island or something like that a while ago. And I think that just at the very least makes this kind of thing sort of interesting. I still don't think that our current ground is actually a cloud island, or at the very least an artificial island or artificial ground from what might have been there before. But I think it's very interesting with what's.
Why, but like, I remember the theory when we brought it up, but it's just like there's land on the ground, right? Like the island clouds, like they literally don't have earth, right? Like that's how we know they're like island cloud. Like, I feel like that theory was just like, what if there is like all of the land that we think is that is currently land is just like island? Like, I don't know. I feel like it's just someone speculating that this could be a thing. When there's like no reason to actually believe that.
I mean, what I'm saying is that I don't remember how I rated it, but I do think at the very least that this is interesting in terms of, I still don't think that we're going to be on artificial or whatever, but
Yeah.
in terms of understanding that that's like an actual possibility for saving whatever the world is going forward. And at the very least, it makes me wonder a little bit about if there was ever anything done like that to create the world that we actually live in currently, but I think as we see whatever Vegapunk might do with that, I think it'll be really interesting and like give us an opportunity to I just think it presents interesting possibilities. I think it makes it very, very clear that the end game of the series is going to involve the threat of a giant world flood.
Yeah.
That
Sky
seems
travel.
all but obvious at this point. And I think it opens some questions about exactly what is going to cause a flood that's big enough to really shake the entire world like that.
Yeah, no, I mean I think it's pretty clear that, well, maybe not pretty clear, but it's definitely been suggested that it's just the weapon, right? Like we've already seen one use of it causes like sea levels to rise by a whole meter. So it's just like, well, what would
I think like
happen if we
what use of it are we going to be looking at that is large enough to cause the impending flood?
mass genocide, right? Like if the whole curtain comes down and the world government, you know, has to do their great cleansing, then like, you know, you just going after island, like maybe you go after island after island after island to, you know, get rid of the people who know too much. And then, you know, if taking out one island causes the sea levels to rise that much, taking out like 50 islands, you know, like that would do some real damage, right?
I think my question is sort of, ooh, well, what 50 islands? Or will it be one really big island or continent or something like that?
Feel like it would be a lot of stuff like, the Minks and like a lot of these kingdoms that we think of as former allies of the ancient kingdom, right? The Minks, the Tontaras, the maybe like Alabasta, maybe Dressrosa, maybe Fishman Island, like places like that, maybe Wano, right? Like I don't think it would just be like, I think Lelouchia was a bit indiscriminate because they were just testing out the weapon, but I don't think all of these islands would necessarily be like that.
We'll see. I think it'll be interesting to figure out exactly what happens.
Yeah.
But the idea that we're going to end up with some kind of big cloud island tech, and I don't know, maybe everyone moves up to the sky, or we just have cloud islands somewhere on the ground, it could be kind of fun. It definitely creates some interesting story
Yeah.
possibilities. And I guess
Definitely.
this also makes me wonder about the ancient kingdom and why the sky islands were ever originally created too.
Here's what this makes me wonder, right? If the sea levels do actually rise and people do have to relocate up onto like island cloud and whatnot, right? Do you think there's going to be any way to actually like reverse the flooding that has been done both in the way long distant past, as well as the flooding that is to come? You know what I mean? Like there was a theory that I brought a couple weeks ago where like Morge speculated that the flooding was because the red line was artificially created, so you just added like a large object into a body of water so that caused displacement and the water level rose up, right? So she was like, oh well, maybe if we defeat Emu, the red line disappears, water levels return to normal, and we get back all of this land, right? Like that was his way of trying to speculate how we might undo a lot of this flooding stuff that the world government is intending to do. Do you think if the flooding happens that there will be any way to reverse it? Or is that just going to be the world that we live in at that point?
Right now, it seems, with it being that the flooding is due to giant holes in the ground, it does seem difficult to imagine that that would suddenly be something that you could rectify and have the sea levels go back down. But on the other hand, I kind of like the idea of if we have to figure out how to go back down. But if it goes back to the original, then what? Are the fishmen just gonna lose their home? I guess they can live
Yeah,
above ground.
they can live underwater, so I think the fishermen will
Like,
be the only people that'll be fine.
there's gonna be a bunch of dead sea kings.
Dead Sea Kings?
Yeah, like the sea kings. I mean, unless there's some kind of actual technology that, and that's why Shirahoshi can control them. But the
Wait, why would they be dead?
Well, it's like if the water goes all the way down.
Oh, sorry. Oh, you're saying if we undid the flooding. I got you. I
Yeah, I'm
got
saying if
you.
we undid the flooding.
I got you. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
I think it's, I would guess it seems unlikely that we'll fully undo it, but I think there will be some kind of material change that allows us to live in the world differently than people are currently living in it.
Got
And who
you.
knows, maybe the cloud island technology could be part of it.
Yeah. Okay.
So going back to the chapter, York runs into Stella, putting the Dendenmushi into the Iron Giant, mentioning that if their experiments to optimize the Mother Flame allow the giant to move again, it'd be a big breakthrough in creating the ideal energy source while praying it never gets perfected. A little bit more fuel for the Katie-style theories about Luffy being the same as or related to the Mother Flame. Then 2 days before the broadcast, Shaka, Edison, and Stella erase their memories of the last 2 weeks and wake up to a note from themselves that reveal the world government has discovered their research and telling them to go die. Now, that was a pretty funny scene, Abraham.
It was hilarious. I mean, I thought the whole Lilith stuff earlier in the chapter, that was the stuff that made me laugh the most, where he's just like, someone betrayed us. Oh, it's probably Lilith. We need to figure out why Lilith, I mean, someone betrayed us. I wonder why
It's
Lilith.
got to be
So,
Lilith, obviously.
I should apologize to Lilith. That was the scene that made me laugh the most, but this was also pretty funny.
Which Vegapunk is Lilith? What part of himself was he did he put in there? Because it was also a bad one, right?
Yeah. Was it like ambition or something like that? I don't remember.
No, it was definitely something more decidedly bad than ambition.
Oh,
Hopefully
yeah.
Alex will have us with
She
that one. I forgot.
she
But
embodies evil. That's
okay,
literally
yeah,
his
exactly, right.
aspect
It's
of
like it
evil.
literally, so when I'm like, yeah, it's something definitely more bad, it's like evil. Yes.
She's literally the evil Vegapunk. That's crazy.
It actually is. So of course they would have thought it was her, to be fair. But yeah, the waking up and finding and reading it and seeing, I think just the fact that he like actually is telling himself to go die was pretty funny, and the whole eyes popping out of the head. But honestly, at the very least, for a chapter that not that much happened, we got a couple moments of laughter.
Oh, it did. It definitely did.
So the chapter closes out with the Vegapunks reacting to the Straw Hats reaching Egghead, and Vegapunk, mid-rescue, telling Sanji, "It's about the One Piece. I want you guys to be the ones to find it." As Usopp, Luffy, and the Giants back in the present
Hey,
toast and set sail for Egghead.
I've been telling you Elbaf is Usopp's arc.
Bro, come on, man.
I mean, it just, listen, it's not, I'm not, I didn't tell you because of this picture, this scene at the end of the chapter. It's just clearly been like 900 chapters incoming ever since Little Garden, where we just know that Elbaf is going to be Usopp's arc. Now, you could keep fighting and pushing back on it, but like no arc. You can say Zoro in Wano, but Zoro in Wano was never actually hyped up like Usopp. Like Zoro never said, "I want to go to Wano, I this that and the other," but like Usopp has in Little Garden, in Enies Lobby, like throughout the whole story, he's just been hyping up the giants of Elbaf, talking about how he wants to go there, how they represent like real men and whatnot. And, his dad is going to be there. Like, I'm just saying, this is very clearly going to be like,
I'll
he's
give
not
you
going to get
the
more shine.
dad
He's not going
being
to get more,
there.
he's not going to get more shine than Luffy, obviously, because Luffy's the main character, right? But in terms of like secondary characters that will be developed and whatnot in that arc, I think it's clearly going to be someone like Usopp. Maybe Loki, like who will, I'm assuming will meet in the arc and will be play an important role. I feel like basically Loki, Shanks, and Usopp will be like the three secondary characters that get the most focus in the story outside of Luffy in Elbaf.
Well, honestly, at the very least, a lot of characters on both crews will have to end up getting a lot of attention because the format of the battle in Elbaf being a baby back fight theoretically would create a lot of space for. It's hard to even just have secondary characters. Everyone's going to have to be in all kinds of crazy fights, Yasop and Usopp fighting in a
Think about
sniper
how
baby back
sick,
fight.
bro. Think about how sick that would be. Just like Usopp and Yasopp. You telling me you wouldn't love seeing that? Like,
Bro,
do you did
I'll be rooting for Yasop, bro. I'll be like,
what?
Yasop, you better noob
Why?
this little boy. Yasop, you better noob this little boy.
Bruh, let me tell you, do you remember Daddy Masterson from, this was like an anime only thing, but it was back in Log Town where they met Smoker.
Oh, you
There
know
was
what?
this.
I know who that is because one of the early Japanese books I read was like a, fourth grade level book about the Rogue Town arc. And Daddy Masterson was in it. I was like, what? Who the rest is Daddy Masterson? But
Daddy Masters. So Usopp and Daddy Masterson have their own like sniper battle in the arc that Usopp ends up winning. And yeah, I just obviously Usopp can't beat Yasopp in a fight. You know what I mean? But it's just like, can, because I'm sure Yasopp has much better haki than him. I'm sure Yasopp is much stronger than him. Like, but in terms of pure sniping skill, right? I think Usopp legitimately would have, we don't know much about Yasopp, but I think he would be able to hold his own in just a competition about sniping. Hit the targets, whatever. Like that Turkish dude in the Olympics, where he's just like standing there going like, pow, pow,
Dude,
pow. The
like Usopp versus Van Auger, how big is the gap right now? Because Van Auger, I hear shooting things very far away.
I think Usopp is gonna have to really develop his observation haki to fight Van Auger. That's going to be
So
the key for
you
him.
think Van Auger, he's got more sniping skill than Yasop. Now, to be fair, Yasop fights with pistols, so like.
Well, I'm not talking about sniping skill because I think sniping skill between Van Auger and Usopp is prob like I think in terms of pure sniping skill, Usopp is already at that level in the series. Like if you were just like hit
With
a
Van
target,
Auger?
yeah, I think if you were just like hit a target distance, whatever, like I think Usopp can run with the best of them. I he clearly isn't as strong. He's not as strong as these characters are. Like, I think he would get wrecked by Van Auger right now if the two of them fought. He'd obviously get wrecked by Yasop right now if the two of them fought, right? I think that's where Usopp needs to grow. But I don't think the growth that he has to, like, think about all the Usopp growth moments that we had in the story to this point, right? Like, in either whether that be like in Arlong Park or in, any slobby or wherever, right? I don't think the emphasis has ever been on he's had to improve his sniping skill, right? It's like, oh, he in Dressrosa, he unlocked Haki, right? In any slobby, that was literally the thing where they were like, who the hell is like sniping us from like this far distance? We can't even see them, blah blah. Like he's always been that guy in terms of sniping ability. He's just never actually had the combat prowess to back that up. And I feel like that's where his growth needs to come from.
Hey, bro, all I know is I still don't even think Usopp ever shot something as far as Van Auger shooting that seagull at the very beginning of the
Fair.
series.
That's fair. I don't think he has. I don't think he has. That's true. But
He literally
yeah.
was like, bro, you all, he literally was like, bro, you all are tripping. No one could have possibly shot this from all the way back on
Yeah,
Giant. Like, no one could have possibly shot this, he said.
that's fair. That's
Now,
fair.
don't get me
Yeah.
wrong, he might have said that about something like Dressrosa at that point in the story when he was that much weaker. You know, and he hadn't yet unlocked any of that observation haki ability. So, like that feat that he had in Dressrosa, which once again I have always acknowledged is a single impressive feat, is still doesn't make me feel like he actually has it at this point, like Van Auger does. And he might be at a point where he can level up to get there, but I don't feel like he has it at that stage
He's
yet.
definitely got to level up, but like,
It definitely doesn't seem to me that, like, I don't know. I feel like, I mean, Yasop literally is his daddy. And I want Yasop to show him that he is his daddy. I want him to show him that he's his daddy at sniping and shooting. And you know, I wouldn't mind for him to show him that he's his daddy in love because he's been, you know, traveling around the world, leaving this little boy to become a liar, saying the pirates are coming home because he's so sad and lonely. So while I want him to noob Usopp, I want him to do it while giving him a father's love that he has not had for a long time.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. We'll see. We'll be at Elbaf soon and we'll see what comes from that, right?
We'll be there soon with Bonnie and Lilith. So exciting stuff. So we don't have a chapter next week, so there'll be no predictions, but I think we can give awards to this chapter. Awards show, the segment where we give awards to noteworthy moments you might have missed. Abraham, what you got this week?
So my award is gonna go to Vegapunk actually. Is the Kenny Smith Award. So Kenny Smith is a commentator on Inside the NBA. He's everyone's least favorite of the four between Shaq, Chet, Ernie, and Kenny. And he has the great ability to speak a lot and say very little. And that's kind of how I felt about a lot of Vegapunk's monologue these past like 10 or so chapters, especially in this chapter. So I'm giving Vegapunk the Kenny Smith Award.
Hey man, I like Kenny, man. I don't know why you gotta hate on Kenny like that. Like, just because he's not Charles and Shaq. Listen, man, you don't gotta hate on Kenny like that, man. I definitely feel you on it. Like, I think thinking about it, I'm like, dang, like, was it Noda's birthday that we had the live show when the broadcast began?
Was it that long?
Because there's two times I was in St. Louis. One of them was in beginning of June, but I'm pretty sure that the broadcast began at the one that was a live show. It was because that was when I was in the car with Samir, and I was like, yeah, what if one of the things that we get is an explanation for why the
So
world is a series of a bunch of islands?
we've been going through this speech since like March, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, exactly.
This is why he got that award. Speaking a lot and saying very little.
It's been a long way, that's for sure. I'm gonna give the Regina George Award to Lilith because she clearly is a mean girl. And she bad, but she's a mean girl. And everyone, as soon as they're like, who betrayed someone who might have done some evil thing, everyone's immediately just like, Lilith, Lilith, Lilith. You know, I don't know exactly how she's treating all the rest of the Vegapunks, being the manifestation of evil, such that they immediately feel that way. I know that she's technically the manifestation of evil, but surely, 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 it would not be so bad as to just immediately be that they think she's betrayed them. I mean,
I
and she's
felt
the
bad for
baddest too, so Regina
she
George.
is. She is the baddest. I like it a lot. I felt bad for Lilith. I felt like they were stereotyping her.
When you said she's the baddest, I like it a lot. He said, I like it a lot. What are we talking about there, man?
Oh man.
You talking What are you talking about, her body? What are you talking about? I like it a lot. She's
Oh,
the baddest. I
her?
like it a lot,
Me?
you said.
I mean, she is a baddie. She Lilith, she's a bad she does
Just
she
funny.
objectively is, right?
It's just
Like
funny when you're
she's a
like,
beast.
I like it a lot, you know, like she looks good.
Oh,
I really like it, you know.
I meant the award, the Regina King award, Regina
Okay,
George Award. Like
got
I was
it.
thought I was just agreeing with the award that you gave out, but there was some loss in we weren't on the same page, but we are now. I like the award, Jordan.
We are. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. And we at the very least were on the same page about her
We go.
being back. All right. It's time for One Piece Would You Rather. Alex, you want to help us out here?
Sure thing. This week's Would You Rather is another one in the romance realm. I don't know if either of you have been
Oh boy.
friend-zoned in real life before, but if you
Don't want to
were,
talk
would you
about it.
rather be friend-zoned by Nami or Vivi? Maybe my characterization is a bit off, but the way I read this is, would you rather be Sanji or maybe Pell? Jordan, you're the resident Amour. Between Nami and Vivi, who are you chasing after?
Okay, I want to be really clear about something with this Pell suggestion before I get into it, because I know Abraham would have felt this way. Pell, that age difference, Pell was a grown man when Vivi was a little child. I really do not like thinking that Pell has been in love with Vivi and getting friend zoned by her
Who's
this whole
implying
time.
this? Who is it? I hate whoever did you imply who wrote this? Who
I'm implying it.
Oh,
I didn't read the is it Alabasta? I didn't read the arc, but then I was like, maybe I
neither.
should look up Pell just but there's
Yeah.
tons of Game of Thrones. You've got Sir who's that guy? There's an older knight who's in love with Dani when she's like
I know what
14.
you
So it's
mean. Yeah,
not unheard of. It's not
yeah.
unheard of.
Sir Barristan or
Barristan,
whatever.
thank you.
Yeah, actually, wait, that wasn't that's the wrong person. Jorah
Listen, yes,
Mormont.
and in Star Wars Episode One, the whole Anakin Padme age difference is a little bit weird. Although, to be fair, I think that the Pell to Vivi age difference from when they are children is a lot bigger. But that would be giving me serious Woody Allen vibes, where it's like, adopt a daughter, adopt a daughter, adopt a daughter.
Pell has clearly not been friend zoned by Vivi because there was never any romantic interest there. But to answer Alex's question, I would much rather be friend zoned by Vivi than Nami, because Nami is emotionally manipulative and exploitative. Like you see how she takes advantage of Sanji. Honestly, she just takes advantage of men who will let her or people who will let her take advantage of them, right? I feel like if I was into Nami like that and I was friend zoned, I would just be, she would have me doing the most. Like I would be giving her, get picking her up from the airport at 3 a.m. I would be make like, it would be a whole lot of unnecessary stuff for never to anything to manifest from that. Whereas I feel like Vivi is a very selfless, kind person. If I was friend zoned by her, I feel like she would make it clear that we were never going to be anything more than just friends. You know what I mean? She'd be like, look, I'm not into you like that. We can still be friends. Whereas Nami would kind of give you that little hope where she's just like, she would say things and do, she'd like touch your arm and be like, give you suggestions that maybe more will come if this relationship, but nothing's ever going to come. So I feel like there's no world in which I'd rather be friend zoned by Nami than Vivi.
But man, here's the thing about Nami. Now, one, I'm very strong-willed. So, if I was the very least, if I had to come to accept it at some point, I'll push the issue enough to get a straight answer. And then, if I get a straight answer at some point, I go on first dates and I split the bill. I don't be paying on all these first dates. You know what I'm saying? I don't be buying all this stuff to try and impress women. I don't be, as dressing up to try and impress women. So to me, I feel like I would at the very least be able to restrain myself and like not end up just while I'm in the friend zone with Nami, going all in, paying for all this stuff, getting emotionally manipulated this way. But the thing is, while you're in the friend zone, you do at least get to be friends with them. And yes, there's benefits to being friends with Vivi. She is a literal princess. You do get a whole kingdom, whatever. But honestly, I just think Nami is more fun.
In what world? Nami is, honestly, she's not my least favorite Straw Hat, but like she is definitely in the bottom half. She's in the bottom half of my Straw Hat rankings. What is fun about Nami?
I don't, it's like, I don't like people. Vivi's personality feels more like dull and plain to me. And I feel
Fair.
like me and Nami could go and get into some shenanigans. I feel like if I go out and say some just like crazy, ridiculous, Jordan man type stuff that's a
Yeah.
little bit out of pocket, Nami might just kind of like laugh or say some ridiculous stuff back, or we could like rip on each other. And she was those kind of things. Whereas I feel like Vivi reminds me of the kind of girls who.
Her whole personality is that she's nice. That's like
Yes,
her whole personality.
exactly. And I'm like, listen, like at the very least, if I'm gonna be friend zoned by someone, I wanna be like friends with someone who I think is like interesting. And like Nami's got a whole tragic backstory and has also, I mean, look, I'm not saying that that qualifies her for being interesting, right? But I'm just saying that like when you talk about the whole personality being nice, I think there's some depth that we see with Nami of like managing a lot of different kinds of emotions over the course of her life. I think like I really think it's cool the way she kind of came from where she's from, has sort of a sense of down to earthedness about, has been raised in a sense of down with of in a way that is a little bit more down to earth with the world, right? Like whatever her face is, Jeannie, the girl I was hanging out with for a while, who her grandpa was the first president of Clinique. She was just so removed from what felt like down to earthedness. It was like not someone that I was like, dang, like you really are my people. And I get a sense with Nami that we could have like a really,
So,
like I think it would be fun. I think we'd be able to bust each other's balls. I think we'd be able to get up into like random shenanigans. When Vivi just seems like a plain nice girl.
okay. I think you got an unrealistic expectation of what being friends with Nami, not even being friends, being friend
No,
zoned
man,
by
I'll be
Nami is going to
strong. I'll
be
be
like, but
strong.
you know what? I'll let you keep your unrealistic
Listen,
expectation.
I'll be strong. Listen, I have this one friend. Her name is Mo. And I love Mo, but Mo is a boss. Like, seriously. Now, one time we were in Virginia at 7-Eleven for a track meet. And we went because we wanted to go get Slurpees and wings after our competitions. We're like, yeah, there's a wings over down here and there's a 7-Eleven down here. So we go down there to get these Slurpees. And so Mo's like, oh, can I have some of your Slurpee or whatever? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And she just goes like expecting me to like put it in, like just she's like, oh, just like she leans forward.
Yeah.
So leans forward, like opens her mouth as if I was supposed to just like put the Slurpee in her mouth. And I got like halfway and I was like, Wait, no. What?
You got
What are you
beds?
doing? Just what are you doing? Just like you can take the drink and like try some of it, but no, you cannot just do this and imply that I should serve you in this way. And I feel like as I have grown, I have learned to be just like the girl that came on a first date and didn't even bring any money or her wallet. And I said, you can Venmo me. So that's all I'm saying. I'm strong. I'm not going to get taken advantage of by
That's
not being this
kind
way.
of out of pocket to show up without a wallet or any money at all. That's kind of crazy.
Right. It's like, at least if you're going to
I wish I could do
pretend,
that on a
like,
first
at
date.
least pretend.
I really do wish I could, not even just on a first date, just go anywhere without my wallet, any money. Just
Right, honestly, seriously an issue. But yeah, me and Nami, we're hanging out, we're having a good time. I'm not getting taken advantage of, and I want this. I want the one with a little bit of crazy, a little bit of interesting. We're gonna have a good time.
All right. Alex, let's get into some of this culture.
Sounds good. I don't know if you have been definitely watching the Olympics. We've talked about some of the track and field events, but I think we gotta hit breakdancing or breaking. During these Olympics, breaking has given us a ton of incredible moments, from the infamous Australian breaker to the Lithuanian breaker that came out in a do-rag. Jordan, what do you think about Olympic breakdancing, and how do you feel about it being taken away in 2028?
Well, I'll start by saying I don't care about it being taken away in 2028. Me and my buddy Julian were messaging about it. He's also a track athlete, one of my old teammates, and we were just like, he lives, he's from New Zealand and he's lived in Australia. And I was like, what do you all think about the ray gun? And he's like, honestly, same as over there. And but honestly, breakdancing is not even an Olympic sport. Who cares about it being away? It's not an Olympic sport. It's a
I mean,
cool
it
cultural
was.
thing.
It was. It's like, because it was literally in the Olympics, so it was.
Yeah, right. But like, you know what I mean? Maybe it's a competition that like found its way into the Olympics briefly. I do not mind it being taken away. Maybe they were trying to do some like thing because it's big in France and it's like French culture, like how we're gonna have baseball comes back in America and flag football. But no, this is I do not care about it leaving the Olympics. I just thought the whole thing was hilarious. We could have a whole serious conversation about cultural appropriation and how it seems as if, you know, there's all these, it's like this thing that grew up in black and brown communities, and now we get here and it's a bunch of white people and Asians, and it's just very different. But it like there were some people who had some cool moves over the course of the whole thing.
Oh
They
yeah.
were definitely pretty swaggy, but like I just find the whole thing kind of ridiculous. There's
Bro.
this, it's like it just feels like people are like, you know, like just doing these some of these gestures, like they're standing around and it's like a 16-year-old white girl and from Lithuania wearing a do-rag and she's just like putting her hands up like, oh, I'm a rapper, I'm a rapper, and I'm like,
She got a silver medal.
I know, yeah, she's supposed to be, I mean her actual dance moves were good.
Yeah.
Like, but like all the standing around being like, oh, like, yeah, like I'm like nodding and like being like, yeah, oh, I'm like, dang, like that feels less genuine than if I did all that and I'm not doing all that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, obviously it is like, hip hop is like, black culture and whatnot, but like, I don't know. I'm just like, I feel like I care less about cultural appropriation when it's done one, not for profit, and two, not in a disrespectful manner. Like, where I have issues with
Bro,
like
what
cultural.
Reagan did was disrespectful.
Wait, wait, who? Ray Gun?
Reagan did was disrespectful.
Yeah, but like I feel like you have sometimes you have like these like mass like Pottery Barn or something like that where they can come out where they're like, oh, look at our brand new whatever line, like of like tablecloths or or like you can like go to H&M and they'll be like, they'll have like these, maybe not H&M, but they'll come out with these new lines of clothes or fabrics or whatever that are clearly pulled from other cultures, but they don't actually like shout out and recognize those cultures, and just it's literally just purely for profit. That's where I would have an issue with stuff like cultural appropriation. For stuff like this, I'm just like, does it really matter? No, I don't really care, right? Like, she's out there in a do-rag. The thing that I took me the
Man,
back of
I
this.
wasn't even saying my problems with it being culturally appropriate. I'm saying, well, you can have a conversation about that. It's just that it's silly. It's silly. The whole thing looks silly, but go on, go on.
No, I mean, like, breakdancing is breakdancing, hip hop. Like, I feel like that is like when you're at like a cipher or when you're at a club or whatever, and hip hop is like playing, like, you know, that's kind of how people are moving, right? People aren't like, you know, like swinging their arms like, you know, Carlton and stuff, right? Like, people just, they have like a certain way of like moving out in the club, and I feel like that's kind of what they're trying to replicate. I don't know. I didn't really watch it. I saw Juliet put me on to the Australian breakdancer and show me some of the shorts of like what this, I think this lady is like a teacher who happened to like show up to like the Olympics and do her thing, and people were killing her for it. I was just like, man, you know,
Bro, did you
it's kind of
like?
like, it's like when it's you put a regular person. You know, a couple people have told me this in the past, where it's like, if we just had like a regular person beside all of these athletes, just to like see like what the bar is, you know, like you had me running the 100-meter dash alongside with all of you. That's what this
I
looks
think.
like. I feel like that was basically the Australian lady in the
Just
breakdown. Yeah.
for some more background on her, I think she's married to one of the organizers who got the breakers in Australia to the Olympics. So
Bro,
there's a
now we
conversation
know.
there. Yeah.
Now we know, because that's the question everyone had, is how in the world did this woman actually get selected to be as a part of this Olympic team? And Alex has given us the knowledge. She is married to one of the organizers. And so that's how she got out here with her silly little kangaroo moves as the only person who can't do any of the actual cool spins and twirl. Like you see people doing all these cool, like, oh, I'm only on my hands, spinning my whole body around, or I'm on my head, like I'm hitting all these freezes, as they called them. And she did not do any of that. She's out here like a kangaroo, flopping around like a fish on
A
the ground,
kangaroo?
like
Bro,
a
that might be
whale out of
racist.
water.
That might be. You can't call an Australian lady a kangaroo. That might be a little bit racist.
That's what she did. She did this. Like, she literally
On,
did.
bro. I don't care. You can't. You can't.
Bro, she literally did that. And Alex has given us the actual reason that she managed to be in the breakdance competition. The worst part, she posted on Instagram something about, like, it's okay to be different and it's okay and don't let people not tell you whatever. And the comments on it were just totally brutal. I sent it to my sister and she was like, dang, like she should take that down. And I'm like, you can't take it down if the original post is about how you, like, don't let haters get to you, and you shouldn't be afraid to be different.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I got a good laugh from it, you know. She probably feels a little bit embarrassed by it, which is why she had to say all the stuff that she said. But yeah. Look, also to answer the question that you actually asked us, Alex, am I gonna miss that it's gone in 2028? Not really, because I didn't even realize it was here in 2024 until Jordan was like, "Oh, I want to talk about breakdancing at the Olympics." So I'm definitely not gonna miss it. But you know, I feel like it brought some laughter into my life, and so I'm happy that we had it in the Olympics these last couple of weeks.
This lady gets to call herself an Olympian, and I do not.
Sorry, what? I didn't hear what you just
I
said.
said this lady gets to call herself an Olympian, and I do not.
Well, yeah, and
That's
that's
not right.
factually correct.
That's not
She
right.
is factually
That's not right. That's morally wrong.
incorrect. Well, in 2028, what you got to do is you got to find some random thing that nobody else does, right? Like this Australian woman and break dancing, and
Right.
try and break your way into the Olympics that way.
I'll be better than her. Yeah, break it. Yeah, break my way in. Ha
Like Olympic skee ball or something like that.
ha ha. Yeah. I'll be better than her break dancing in 1 week. Alex, what's next?
Yeah, we've got another topic that involves something that it gets into some morality and right and wrong. I don't know if either of you have seen the headlines, but a lawsuit against Disney has been getting a bit of press. In 2019, Jeffrey Piccolo and his wife, Dr. Kanakporn Tang Swan signed an arbitration clause when signing up for a Disney Plus trial. For some background, an arbitration clause usually means an agreement to settle legal disputes outside of the court system. Then in 2023, the couple bought tickets to Disney World with the account. Tragically, despite expressing the severity of her dairy and nut allergies several times, Dr. Tang Swan died of anaphylaxis after dining on Disney property. Disney is now alleging that Jeffrey is unable to sue for his wife's wrongful death and must agree to go to arbitration. Abraham, what do you think about this tragedy?
I think it's terrible. I hadn't I mean, I was telling you guys I had no idea what arbitration really meant or was in like legal terms, but like, and you know, I know nothing about the legal system, but like common sense would just tell you that that makes what's happening doesn't really make any sense, right? That there's clearly a lack of accountability that Disney is trying to take. And it's, yeah, it's terrible. I can't believe that that's some, yeah. Like I signed up for a Disney Plus account, and because I signed up for a Disney Plus account, all of a sudden that means I've just waved my life away for like, in terms of any accountability on behalf of, that's insane to me.
Yeah, bro, it's definitely crazy. Like the idea, it's like, dang, like if it was at least at the Disney waiver, I would, if it was at least with the waiver at like actually at Disney, I would be like, dang,
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
that's they
It's
I
like
would at
if
least be
you.
like, that's still crazy and wrong, but.
Yeah. Like if you're doing a risky activity, like you go bungee jumping or you go like you whatever, right? You sign a waiver before doing that activity because you are assuming a certain amount of risk onto yourself. It's just like, is that, you know what I mean? Like I don't understand where these companies like Disney feel like they, I guess they're just big enough and can afford all of these corporate lawyers and whatnot, where they're just like, yeah, they feel like they can just change the rules to fit them, and like, it's insane.
And it's one of these things too that it feels like we're consistently clicking on a bunch of things that definitely none of us is reading. But it also sort of feels like because these companies have the power to actually, it's like if you ever want to stay in an Airbnb or any, you know, a, go to a Disney resort, like it feels like they have the ability to coerce you into signing these things if you want to be able to, you know, enjoy a certain number of functional things in society. And it's pretty sucky realizing that, like, you know, there's going to be a lot of opportunities. There are a lot of things that we don't recognize that we're signing. And that without some kind of like regulation about what they're allowed to coerce you into, it's like, dang, how in the world are we going to, like, this was just so silly. Like, how in the world are we going to actually fight this?
Yeah, and I mean, like, look, I know, I'm sure Disney doesn't want to pay out money in a lawsuit or whatever, but like, bro, this is one of the biggest companies in the world. You can do right by, you know, like nothing is ever going to make amends for, you know, the like this man losing his wife and like, you know, their family, the suffering that their family's going through. But if you have to, if like, what is like a million, 5 million, however much money they might, you know, settle on in a loss, like what is that to Disney? That's nothing. I don't
Pennies,
know.
pennies. It's like, man, what if it was like a first of all, just if you think about Disney, like the effort to be like, oh, this guy died. Let's find out if he had a Disney Plus account. Right? Like you have to actually make that connection to be like, oh, he died. Let me just check if he had a Disney Plus account so we can see if we can actually like take this loophole on him.
Makes me wonder what else I've signed my own life away from.
Right. It's like, dang, some of these 1 month free trials. Ooh.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's sad. I feel really, really bad for this man and his wife's family and whatnot. Hopefully they
Yeah.
you know, they get the justice that they deserve. And yeah, I you know, wish him all the best.
Hopefully we end up coming back to the show in a couple of weeks and it tells us exactly what happened and they got lots of money from Disney. But anyway, that's all we have for time. Thanks to Alex, who friend who produces this podcast, for helping out behind the scenes. Since we're on break next week, come back next Sunday for S-Class and F-Class review of One Piece theories. In the meantime, we are your friends who read One Piece. Help us get more friends by liking, rating, and viewing us wherever you get your podcasts, on YouTube at Friends Who Read One Piece, and we're on Twitter at FWROPPod. Thanks, everyone. Peace.
Peace.